Appeals attorneys for the teen serving a life sentence for the tragic shooting at Oxford High School have filed a motion with an Oakland County judge urging him to consider input from lay witnesses regarding the shooter's family and home life. Now, these witnesses, not previously presented in court, could provide some crucial insights that were overlooked during the initial plea and sentencing hearings. And let's bring in Todd Flood now. He's attorney and managing partner at Flood Law, who joins us on the JR Morning Live line to talk more about this. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. So how significant do you believe this new evidence could be in impacting the outcome of the shooter's case?
You know, the question becomes whether or not there's any possible chance that the shooter has the ability to show on an appeal that there was an error such that the judge, it was a palpable error, and the judge just totally missed it with regards to his, you know, the shooter being rehabilitated or having some prospect that he wasn't a corrupt mind. And I think the evidence with regards to the shooter was overwhelming in that hearing. So I doubt very seriously that there will be, in this phase, enough to overturn what the judge did.
You can't just say, well, we have more people that have come forward, right, and say this person is not as bad as we originally thought.
Yeah, it's not newly discovered evidence. You just can't keep on piling on. You're so right. But the if there was something that was hidden, which try to fathom what that is, I can't imagine. Now, if you said, hey, listen, my counsel was ineffective or, you know, was deficient or not competent, or I told him or told her to do these things and she never did, that's a different hearing, a different
right.
motion. But I can tell you that there were so many eyes on this particular case. This appointed counsel did a great job in presenting as much as possible.
Well, they're saying that there should have been more family members testifying and there should have been more, I guess, character witnesses. Was it just that they didn't exist, or perhaps they worried about community backlash if they came forward on his behalf?
The intimidation factor, that they were afraid to come forth. Well, you know, you can always have, you can never get in trouble for doing the right thing. So you can always tell the court, hey, I have these character witnesses. Here's their names. Because of the community backlash, there's got to be a vehicle or way for me to be able to present to you, judge, for you to make an educated decision. So I can't imagine in my wildest dreams that, if there was a character witness that the attorney knew about and didn't present that based on information and belief, judge, this witness would give you a look into the prism of how this person sees the world and would be beneficial to you, but they're afraid for you to afraid to be in public. I think the court would have probably closed down the courtroom for that one particular witness, whatever the case may be.
Anonymously. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I
just don't see this phase changing the shooter's disposition.
So Todd, how does an attorney ensure that the voices of these lay witnesses are heard, but you still protect the privacy and the sensitive information?
So it's very difficult, but you can do things under seal, which have to be granted. It's putting something under seal in state court. It's much more difficult than it is in federal court.
Mm-hmm.
In state court, you actually have to get the approval all the way up to the Supreme Court to have a document or something put under seal. Oftentimes, we'll have that with a polygraph exam or something of that sort, you know, that you got to file because of the sensitive material that's put in there. Here, because of a witness and intimidation, there would have to be a mechanism for putting it under seal or to have it in camera for the court to hear the person in camera for their identity. We do that in what we call Frank's hearings when we have confidential informants or people that are cooperating, where the judge can take a person in camera, or they just close off the courtroom because of safety. So there are certain avenues you can take. It's difficult, though, when you get an adult witness.
Todd, let me get your legal opinion on a very different case. Michael Cohen taking the stand yesterday, the star witness for the prosecution. Do you think he did his job in tying Donald Trump directly to this scheme to protect his election chances?
You know, this case kind of drives me crazy a little bit because it seems like an elephant birthing a mouse in some ways. But here's the thing. Michael Cohen did, from what I watched last night and read last night, seem to lay out a significant factual basis of what and to the extent that could be corroborated. There's one piece that's not corroborated, was this approved and signed for this particular case by Trump himself? There's a lot of circumstantial evidence to suggest that it is. There's a lot of evidence that corroborated Michael Cohen, and the jury, after cross-examination, is going to be instructed on this with regards to his testimony. You can believe some, you can believe all, or you can believe none of his testimony. So it's going to be up to the jury when they get that instruction, some, none, or all of his testimony. You decide which part, if any, he's telling the truth. I think it'll be a systematic approach as long as Donald Trump's not doing the cross-examination, because he seems to have a lot of control over his attorneys. But as long as there's a systematic approach of cross-examining Michael Cohen, because what is it? Do you raise your right hand or your left leg when you're telling the truth? How do we know when you're telling the truth? Tell us.
Right.
Right.
You guys lie so much.
Oh, if only Todd Flood were there. Yeah. I got to ask you, though, so many of Trump's defenders, I think, raise an interesting point, which is the way this becomes a felony is if the fraud and the record keeping was in furtherance of an underlying crime. They insinuate that the underlying crime is a campaign finance violation, yet I don't know that that's been explicitly stated yet. Have they made their case that this is a felony?
I think you're getting to the gravamen of the two parts of trouble waters for the prosecution. That is the hook, right? Did they show here that this was for a violation of campaign finance fraud? And what the evidence came from Cohen yesterday suggested that this wasn't about me protecting the marriage. This wasn't about me making sure that the president's or the marriage didn't get out for that. This was, I don't care, he says, President Trump said, I don't care if it comes out afterwards, I'll be the president. So there's this hook for this was strictly for the campaign. But it's such a tenuous, you got to thread that needle.
Thank you. Yeah.
And it's such a tenuous part for that, to me anyway.
There's a lot of rocks clearly you have to hop to get to that final, destination.
Yeah.
Todd Flood, attorney and managing partner at Flood Law. Appreciate you as always here on JR Morning.
Pleasure is mine. The three amigos. Thank you.
Take it easy. And coming up, a federal migrant worker program is squeezing Michigan farmers in their bottom lines. We'll talk more about that coming up at 7:35 as JR Morning continues with Guy, Lloyd, and Jamie.